Hello and welcome to the BLB podcast. This is the first episode in a series where we talk about the short story film, the writing process, and how to get published. The BLB podcast is a new project from Brick Lane Bookshop. My name's Kate Ellis. I'm a writer and an ex-bookseller from Brick Lane. So I've been writing short stories for about a decade now, and I start way more than I finish. And though I completed my MA in creative writing at Birkbeck back in 2015, I'm still very much learning how to write and how to read as a writer. My short fiction has been placed in several prizes and published in the Open Pen Anthology, the Mechanics Institute Review, and the London Short Story Prize Anthology, plus a few others. I'm currently living in Berlin for a few months working with an English language publisher. And here's Peter.
Hi, Kate. So yeah, my name is Peter J. Coles. Hi there. And like Kate, I also studied creative writing at Birkbeck University after spending 6 years studying Japanese for some reason. Let's just not talk about it. My short story career has been quite limited, but I was shortlisted for the Wasafiri Prize in 2018, I think it was. And I've had a few short stories published here and there. But I think my main connection with short stories is that I'm the managing editor of the Mechanics Institute Review Online, which is connected to Birkbeck. And it's like a home for short stories, creative nonfiction, and poetry. But I had a child and there's been a pandemic, and I am completely disconnected from the short story world. I mean, Kate, you're a bit more connected still, right? You're doing the prize. You're still writing. I haven't written in 2 years. I don't know what I'm doing anymore.
So we're going to introduce you back to short stories. We're going to get you back into the zone.
Please do.
I've been out for a while because I was working away on a novel. A misguided endeavor. But now I'm excited to be back in my short story land.
Yeah. So to get us back into the short story, we've invited surely one of the best short story writers out at the moment. I mean, she has to be, right? She's won virtually everything there is to win.
She keeps winning all the prizes, yes. This is Ishikaki, who was shortlisted for the Brick Lane Bookshop Short Story Prize back in our first year in 2019 for her story Girls. And since then, I have been following in awe on Twitter as she's won the Galley Beggar, Mislexia, the Comma Press. What else? She's won another one as well, I think.
Loads. She's run, been shortlisted.
Yeah. Basically, she's nailing short story land.
She knows how to do it. So it'll be interesting to speak to her and find out if she can teach us anything about it and help us learn, help us get back into it.
And now Isha is going to read from her story, All in Good Time, which won the Galley Beggar Press Short Story Prize.
The first time, they don't serve food on the flight. There's been a contamination or spoiling. It's unclear. They apologize for the inconvenience and promise vouchers upon landing. To fill your stomach, you drink and go to the bathroom twice in 15 minutes. Tea spills thick and golden like oil. You look at the word scrawled on your hand and remember that your mother's waters broke on a plane. You cradle tiny bottles of wine that tang sour. Your dreams merge with the novel you're reading about octuplets who end up in the same sorority, tasked with inviting a guest each to a dinner party. They debate the pros and cons of each candidate. They wear the same clothes and the hair is so buttery bright, it must be fake. At immigration, you show them limp pages of your flight, ESTA, scholarship, bank statements. The woman, Tallulah, asks how long you're here for. You say 6 weeks. She frowns, 6 months? No, weeks. You're not authorized to stay for 6 months. They herd you to a hall so packed, surely there can't be any more space. The stink of sweat and unwashed hair swallows you as you step in. You hear the baying of animals. They find you a seat and you see you were wrong. In between the slumped and sleeping bodies, there are people-shaped gaps, as if whoever sat there once has vanished and whoever comes next will slot into their outline, a seamless, never-ending loop. Opposite you is an old man, head tilted back, a calm about him. Every time a border guard, torso bulky with padding, taps him, he opens his eyes and looks with warmth. They gesture to their wrists and hold out 10 fingers, as if to say, 10 more minutes. They do this every half hour, but perhaps they mean hours. The kindness in the man's gaze doesn't change. You want to ask, have you been here long? Is anyone with you? Will you tell me your story? But these are questions you couldn't even ask your mother. You look down at your water bottle, 2 inches of warm water sloshing inside. Bits of you are raw with hunger. The edges of your gums, where a wisdom tooth is sprouting, the swell and throb of your left ankle, the curve of your ribs. You keep hearing sounds like glass shattering, but no one else seems to notice. The air is gritty, as if there's a hole in a window somewhere, sand seeping through. The next time your gazes meet, you offer the bottle to the old man. The smile that breaks his face is so beatific, your chest aches.
Thank you for reading, Isha. That was wonderful. I have actually, I read before we recorded this, but I had actually read before because I get this irrational sense of pride whenever a Brick Lane Bookshop alumni wins anything, and you've won a lot of things. So I was happy to see that you'd won the Galley Beggars, and I read the story with this sort of like weird excitement. It was, yeah, I love the way you play with time in it. And it was interesting reading it, having remembered your story, Girls, that we published. You kind of leapt forward formally in All in Good Time. There was a lot of overlapping themes of like the sort of body and with food and with hunger and with vulnerability. And it was really interesting to see the progression in that story.
Every time I read your work, Isha, I just feel like in the most positive but negative way, I feel like I've entered a very dark wood. And I'm surrounded by darkness. But it's there's something so visceral about your work that I love, and I love, and every time I read it, and I think that's what's so interesting and why I think you keep winning all these prizes, these so many prizes that you've won, because you're able to like drill down onto some very emotive human moments that make us sort of feel almost like something's crawling on our skin, but all in a interesting and exciting way. It's like going into that dark wood and knowing that you're going to be terrified, knowing that it's going to be a little bit scary, but you want to keep going just to see what's going to happen next. And I think that's something so compelling about your work. It's absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. You're both very kind.
It's just brilliant. What draws you to the short story form? Because I know that you don't particularly want to write a novel. Is that right? You're not interested in the long form.
I'm not interested in it, but I think at the moment I feel most creatively invigorated by the short story form. And I've been thinking about why that is. And I think because it lends itself to so much possibility in terms of form, in terms of voice, in terms of time and space, you know, you can just jump so much in one from a story to another story, right? And I think like, as I'm sort of figuring out the kinds of things I want to write and playing with voice and theme and imagery and just vibe, you know, the short story form is the best place to see what kind of writing I can do, you know, to experiment. The way that you can do things differently from story to story is what brings, like, keeps me coming back to it. And, you know, once you draft one and edit one, there's this like huge sense of like accomplishment, right? Like the hit of finishing something is amazing. And then, you know, and then I put that aside and I go to the next one, and that is a completely different world and space. And I find that fascinating, that I can go from one space, one emotive space, one thematic space to another one, and do it through the short story form. And also, I just think that the short story can be anything. Like I think, and this is true of other forms as well, but I do think that it can be anything. And that is so exciting to kind of explore.
I agree, totally. The short story form, it, you know, you can experiment with something completely wild, and you can get a draft out in less than a day. If you're doing a wild experimentation,
yeah,
a novel, it takes years to get that draft out.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you can kind of, it affords play, I guess. And I think that's why you can kind of be freer with the short story form. I mean, I haven't done a short story draft in a day for a long time, but I believe it can happen. There's hope.
Yeah. And I imagine that because I haven't written a novel, but I feel like they, those two things are exercising different muscles, right? Mm-hmm. Writing muscles. A short story is very different. And I have written short stories that are like you know, short, and also short stories that are like 4,000 words and more, right? Mm-hmm. So I have written different lengths. But I think it is a and when I go longer, I can see that exercise is a different muscle. And I imagine as you go longer and longer, you know, you're kind of working in a different way. You have to think slightly differently. The practice becomes different. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to consider things like consistency and sort of like
character,
long-term coherence and things like that.
Yeah.
We were in a workshop together, but something I've always noted about your work and giving you comments on is that it can be cryptic. And this piece that you read for us today, it was cryptic when reading it. And I think as a majority novel writer, I find it quite difficult. I'm like, oh, what does it mean? What's happening? What does it mean? But I am being like worn down every time I read your thing. And you don't need to know what it means, do you? You're not, as long as it's not just nonsense, just loads of words like mixed together. As long as it's not that, as long as it's something powerful like your work is, then it doesn't need to have that sort of beginning, middle, and end as a novel tends to. Or do you not feel that way? Do you feel that your work does have that beginning, middle, and end?
I love the idea of you being worn down by my stories, and that is almost adjacent to nonsense.
No. I didn't say it was nonsense.
I know. I'm just
yours is the opposite of nonsense.
Yeah. I think there's a few things in what you've said. One is that, and you're right, that it's not just you. Like, I have I'm doing a PhD, so my supervisor also gives me this feedback, and my first readers often give me the feedback of, you know, things not quite making sense. And part of it is, obviously, that's not the final draft they're seeing. And one of the things that I do, not struggle necessarily, but I have to think a little bit more about is delivery of information. So a lot of the times, like, what recently I've been enjoying about the short story form is, like, when you present something and then as the short story sort of unravels, you know, the thing you saw in the beginning, like there's resonances and more meaning. It takes on more meaning as you go on. But that does require, obviously, like, you know, patience from the reader, but also for that particular reader to notice what I'm doing. And the thing is, like, a lot of the times I think I'm being very obvious in my themes and like what I'm writing, and that's clearly not the case. And I think this is, it's quite, you know, we're so internal with our writing and we think that we're doing something, or like we're being obvious, but of course readers who are reading that, they're going to come at it from a completely different position in life, in their reading influences. And so I think there's like a, almost like a dissonance between that, like, you know, the writer writing from like a very introspective internal kind of world. So I think that's where part of the cryptic nature comes. And I'm trying to, you know, think a little bit more about the reader's experience, like reader's experience when they come into my short story. But also another aspect that I like, you know, of that is, like, as a reader myself of short stories, I think as I read more and more, I'm becoming more comfortable with the idea of ambiguity and more comfortable with the idea that, you know, some stories and some bits of stories will speak very powerfully to me, but not all of it might, or not all stories will. So those are two things, like ambiguity and kind of, you know, knowing that not all stories are for everybody. But yeah, the ambiguity thing is something that is almost like it's like a reading muscle that you have to exercise. Like, you either like it or you don't. And I think a lot of the times novels do have a more traditional structure. And if you're used to reading kind of that sort of more firmer structure that gives you that beginning, middle, and end, when you go to a short story, it might just be like, what am I reading? And I think that, yeah, I think I certainly started appreciating a lot more as I read more. And I always say and think that reading other short story writers and seeing what they're doing and just, you know, looking at the possibility of the form through other writers has been like the biggest sort of, like, you know, teacher or inspiration to me as a short story writer. Yeah.
My brain, I think, naturally is quite kind of rigid, and it's hungry for information immediately. Mm. And I think reading short stories is sort of prized my brain open in a very pleasing way, in that it sort of gets stretched by these ambiguities that you're talking about. But those are the places where the interesting stuff happens. It's like when writers present a situation without telling you what the middle or beginning of the end is, it allows you to sort of play in your own mind as you're reading it. And I think the skill of doing that is that kind of when writers know exactly which parts of their own trains of thought the reader will understand and which that they won't. So it's sort of like you were talking about at the beginning, kind of knowing where to put the information in and knowing where people will pick up and leap off from or not. It's tricky. It's a fine balance.
Peter, how do you feel about those moments when you have to go back and write for the reader instead? Do you enjoy those moments now, or is it a task? Do you wish you didn't have to do it?
No, I actually love editing. So, generally, I think so much, so much of writing is editing and redrafting, right? And I think until you embrace that aspect of the writing process, it's going to feel like a struggle, or I feel like your stories might not necessarily get to the point they could do. Yeah, I don't think that I do write for readers in that sense, but I really value and appreciate when people, say, well, this give me their perspective of where things are not quite making sense. And it gives me a fresh perspective on my own writing. And I do go back and make tweaks, but it might not necessarily be absolutely transforming the entire short story. It might just be adding a line or, so part of taking those kinds of feedback on board is thinking about how big does the change need to be and figuring that out for yourself. And knowing that you don't ever have to make a change that you're not happy with. And I do sometimes think later down the line, I might be thinking more about readers. At the moment, I think I'm thinking mostly about how to articulate the ideas that I want to write about and how to, thinking about, I want to try this thing and then doing that. I welcome those kinds of comments, and they have always helped me to clarify. So, it doesn't feel like something I need to resist, but it's something that helps me in the redrafting process. Yeah. But as I said, that might change later. I think our relationship with writing and, writing for readers and writing for ourselves is probably constantly changing, particularly as maybe more people are accessing your stories. It might be a natural thing to think about that a little bit more. But at the moment, I'm happy sort of incorporating the feedback that I get and not feeling like that's against what I'm trying to do, feeling that it's part of the process of helping me write my stories to be the best stories that they can be. Yeah.
I liked what you said about knowing that you don't have to take all of the edits on, that you have. It's really nice to hear that you have that you listen to editors, but also that you have a really strong sense of where you want your story to go. And so I think that's a thing that writers struggle with sometimes, is having the kind of strength of mind to be like, oh no, this is what it's about. This is my concern in the story. Yeah. It's nice to hear you articulate that.
I do believe having sort of writing group or a critique group is one of the best things that has happened to me as a writer. But I think, people who are sort of starting out writing and showing their work for the first time to people, other writers or just general readers, and hungry for feedback. And I think it can be hard to remember that, people bring their own sort of experiences to a story, and what they are telling you is their particular view and reading of your work, whether that is what you're trying to do. And I think that can be hard, but part of the writing life or the writing process is knowing which feedback to take and which feels intuitively it's enriching your understanding of your own work.
I just want to go back to this idea of darkness. Are you drawn towards more darker themes in your short stories?
At the moment, the stories that I'm writing is very much they're exploring and interrogating themes of trauma and sexual violence and experiences of everyday misogyny and, you know, like assimilation as being violent, cultural identity. And I think the way that I have sort of the creative language that that comes to me when I'm exploring that is sort of the darker kind of language and horror as being a great, you know, tool for exploring political experiences. And it is definitely, I love reading darker stuff myself. Like, you know, I love sort of the darkness of folklore and, you know, so those are things that appeal to me sort of naturally. And I think they are such a great sort of literary tool to relate things that can be very hard. Yeah, that can be really hard to articulate in other ways.
I think maybe this is a good time to talk about Carmen Maria Machado, because she does that pretty well, doesn't she? She kind of uses like horror or fantasy or kind of all sorts of kind of typically genre techniques, but to write quite kind of literary involving bodily short stories. What's your take on her?
I think I'm a bit obsessed with her body and other parties. And I think that, because I think I read it in 2019, the same year that, you know, The Girls was shortlisted. Mm-hmm. And I think that was, I feel like I must have like creative me, like, you know, that writer me must have imprinted on that short story collection, because I think that was the year that I was really thinking about writing as a more professional kind of, you know, as something that I really wanted to develop. I really wanted to put my focus on, like, I really wanted to take myself seriously. And that meant like, which meant like, you know, giving myself time and kind of exploring the themes that I wanted to write and the ways that I wanted to write it. So then I read Her Body and Other Parties, and it was so, I don't know, it blew my mind. And it was also a perfect articulation of the things that I was interested in, but also slightly different, right? And I loved, as you said, it's like blend of like folklore and horror and ghost stories. It's in that crossover space of literary and speculative and genre and just the mash of all of these things. But also I loved her experimentation with form. And that was something I don't think I had maybe actively sought out, or I think I didn't know that I loved that aspect of the short story. And when I saw her like playing around with form and, you know, creating these like formal limitations, but also, you know, these like amazing creatively, like things that broke traditional structures and how that encapsulated different themes. I was just so creatively invigorated by it. I think she does very much a lot of the stuff that I, in my writing, do, which is that using the speculative and using horror as a vehicle of like exploring traumatic experiences and looking at the body and thinking about our lived experiences. And, you know, also she's amazing on writing experiences of queerness and sex and taking the body in all of its like messiness. And I think that's also cool. And I think, you know, that is something that I find myself doing kind of naturally in my work as well. It's like thinking about the body in pain and thinking about, you know, the body as we live in it and not like this literary idea of a body, which is like all clean and, you know, like, yeah. I admire a lot about her work, and I'm so excited that the new collection has been
announced. I was going to ask if you heard about that.
Yes, yeah. Of course, like my heart beat so fast when I read that announcement. And I swear to you, I think I cried tears of like joy when I saw how much money she got for it.
How much did she get? A lot?
Well, it doesn't say, but it says, you know, in like American deal announcements, how they categorize it as, so it was a major deal, which is like the big, like, it's like the most
six or seven figures.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, comment.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know. I think like, obviously I think because her first books in America were published with a small indie press, and like, you know, she's almost like a cult favorite, right? And I don't know how much of it was like word of mouth or what, but it's so exciting to see the short story form get that kind of, you know, mainstream attention, get that kind of like big monetary backing. We all know, like, about 10 years ago, I think there wasn't as much sort of room, like, in the mainstream or short fiction. There was definitely in indie spaces, right? That always has. Mm-hmm. And I think there is more attention and more kind of like grace given to short fiction writers now. And I feel like it's such an exciting time for people to be writing short fiction because there's like an appetite for it.
Yeah, I feel like it's often dismissed as like we haven't got the attention for it anymore, and therefore we have to have, right, everyone wants to read short stories because we don't have time to do anything else. But that's not it. I don't think that's it at all. I think it's just that, again, like you said, the short story offers a way to explore themes differently to a novel. That it can be more experimental. It can be sort of on that cutting edge of the life that we lead now, which is utterly confusing, utterly distorting all of the time. We don't know what the hell is going on, and I think that can, yeah, it can come through the novel. Yeah, sorry, in a short story.
Yeah. But I think that's true. But I also think it's a total myth that you need less attention and concentration for short stories. I think you need more because they're wilder and kind of more bonkers than you can't just pick it up and continue like you can with a novel. It's not like a kind of, there's no comfort in a short story collection. You're kind of spat out of one and onto another. That makes them kind of harder to consume, which is why it's quite exciting that short story collections are getting kind of serious money and attention. They have been occasionally over the years, but like, you know, it's always exciting when you see a big deal for a short story collection, especially when it's Machado. I'm also a fan.
And also because it's doing something quite, you know, like her work is doing something that's different, and you know, her memoir In a Dream House, like that is also amazing in its formal experimentation, in its blend of genre and, you know, all cultural criticism she has. It's non-fiction, but it's also not. And I think to have her as a writer, you know, get that kind of backing, like it's inspiring, and it feels affirmative to anybody who's trying something a little bit weird, a little bit different, you know, who wants to be a bit more ambitious. Like, you know, I feel like it's seeing her succeed is like, yeah, the space, you know, do it, lean into your weird, you know, be brave. So I think that is also an aspect of seeing her flourish.
The BLB podcast is brought to you by Brick Lane Bookshop. As a thank you for listening to us prattle on about short stories, they're offering all listeners a 10% discount. Just use the code BLBPOD, that's BLBPOD, at the checkout for 10% off any purchase from bricklanebookshop.org. The next question, I believe, is a question about the Brick Lane Bookshop Short Story Prize. As we said earlier, your story Girls was shortlisted in 2019, and you read from it at the event, and it was published in our anthology. And I wondered how the experience was for you. Did it help you at all? Was it good?
Yeah, that was an amazing experience. So this was during the summer, autumn of 2019. And as I've mentioned, like, you know, that year was quite, I think of it as almost like a developing turning point for me, where I was thinking and writing in a different way, thinking about craft. And The Girls was one of the first stories I wrote that year. And I think in writing it, I think I was being more intentional with the writing and trying something different and reading things and letting those things influence my writing. And so it was a very joyous crafting process. So I think when that got shortlisted, like that particular story, it was such a affirming experience. And also it was just a completely joyous surprise to have, and as it always is, to have your work, you know, read and held carefully by the competition team and the judges. Like, it's just such a beautiful sort of feeling to know that people have read your work and, you know, somehow connected with it, seen something in it, and want to celebrate it. And that was the first time I'd ever done a reading, I think, particularly in public in front of people. And I always remember, actually, Kate, something you said, which was you gave me such great advice, because I was like, Kate, it's my first time and I'm nervous. And you said, oh, like, no, you should practice reading something out loud three times so that you don't get too bored with the content and so it still feels fresh when you do a public reading. So that was really cool. And I think the experience of it was just really supportive, and it also made me feel like my writing and, you know, like my life as a writer, like I was part of a community or part of something, and with all these other writers who are also writing, and, you know, these people like readers and just a larger literary community who wanted to celebrate the short story. So yeah, a very positive experience, and it definitely gave me the confidence to, you know, keep writing, keep sending my work out there, and keep going down the route that I was going. You know, it made me believe that I was growing as a writer, and that can be such an important thing to feel when you are sort of like, you know, just creative by yourself and sort of in your own space, and to have your work go out there and be recognized in that way is amazing.
That's really, really good to hear. Thank you to Brick Lane Bookshop too. They fund it all.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Together.
But yeah, no, that's really wonderful to hear. That's exactly what we hoped the prize would be able to do when we first dreamt it up behind the bookshop counter in like 2018. So it's kind of really lovely and sort of validating to hear that it matters, that it helps, that it's sort of like bringing together writers. And it was, I remember you reading and you said that you were nervous, but I'm always impressed when writers say that they're nervous and then they go ahead and they read their work in front of a bunch of strangers and it's always great, and you nailed it. And it was kind of quite a lovely thing to see.
So you have won, like, how many prizes now? Like 1, 2, 3, I'm counting them. You have maybe 4, 5?
No.
Four,
I
mean, listed. So there's 4. Got it, no, 6. I'm not trying to embarrass you. I just want to know, like, why do you think it is? Why do you think it is that your work appeals to so many people? Why do you think it's won so many prizes? It might be an impossible question for you to answer, but you must have maybe thought about it, like, what am I doing right?
You know, I always feel very lucky and surprised, and to be shortlisted and to have won more than one thing, I feel extremely lucky. And my view of things like competitions and being shortlisted is like being always aware of how much it depends on who the readers of any competition are and then who the judges of any competition are. And, you know, as with like just general reading anything, it's such a personal process. And I guess I've been lucky in that, you know, the judges and the readers who have read my work, which has been shortlisted or which has won, you know, it has connected with them in some way or they've seen something in it. But, you know, I think there are so many writers who are incredibly talented and doing such amazing things with their writing. So I don't think it's anything to do necessarily with my work being particularly good, you know, and also, like, you know, so I think, and I, so I've never considered that. I just, because I think if you start thinking about it, like, maybe your perspective on your own work changes. Like, I've kind of focused on, you know, doing creative experimentation or kind of going where the ideas lead me and not thinking as much about will this be seen to be a good story, right? And, you know, this is something that I hope, like, people take away from this, is that, you know, it is very much a personal thing when readers and judges are reading competitions. Like, I've just read for the Gallivega press competition for this year, and, you know, there's 5 judges, and, you know, we came up with a long list of 10, but I had so many favorites that didn't make it into that long list, like a lot, right? And also, we were the final selection that we made was from 50 stories, but there was more than 1,000, right? And I feel like, you know, it can be so much to do with like what timing and what a particular judge likes at a particular time, what speaks to them at a particular time. So that's one aspect of it. The other thing that I have noticed is that some of my stories that have done well in competitions, you know, there are ones that do experiment with form. You know, for example, All in Good Time is a time loop structure. In another one, I wrote an article or like a diary entry that was redacted. You know, so it was kind of playing with form and censorship. And I think in the Gallibega Prize judging as well, you know, when a writer is experimenting with form, you kind of notice it a little bit more and see what they're trying to do. So I wonder whether experimentation is something that judges kind of like see, you know, it kind of stands out a little bit. But again, like, you know, it has to work.
Yeah, it's very inspiring to hear that, you know, you are experimenting, and that's something that people seem to resonate with a lot, and it makes me want to go do some experimental writing, I think.
But just while we're on the topic, that I do want to say that, you know, it's not just experimental writing that is, like, you know, again, there is no like sort of assignment of what is good and not good, right? Mm. So, like, you know, some of the most quietest stories, some of the most traditionally written stories have been incredibly powerful, and you know, that's not to say that the, like, you should only try one thing or write one, or one is better than the other. Yeah. Or just an observation I had about my own experience. But you know, just to use the Gallibega judging as an example, is like, you know, some of the stories on the long list, they're very quiet and intimate and very powerful, and there isn't that sense of like formal experimentation in that, in the way that we've been talking about.
I think that there's no recipe, is there?
Yes, exactly, Kate. That's it.
There's no recipe, and I sit on the Brick Lane Bookshop judges meeting when they decide the winners, and I obviously at this point have read the stories, and I can never ever predict which ones they will love. And they seem to go for the stories that surprise them and the stories that move them most. And yes, it's like, it's not the perfect stories or the neat stories or the ones that are kind of technically brilliant that get them, but more the ones that are like, often the ones that make them laugh are the ones that kind of upturn their expectations. Because the judges are usually people that read a lot. So if they can find something that feels fresh, that is usually the thing that they will opt for. There's no telling.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating insight. And I do think that, you know, the competition space, and also depends with like what platform, or like, you know, like, for example, is doing that competition, right? So something like Gallibega Press or Desperate Literature, they are looking for experimental stuff, right? But there are other short story competition that are not necessarily looking specifically for that. And also, I think competitions are a place that you can maybe try something different. But also, if you're submitting to journals and stuff, you know, you have to kind of see what that journal is, the kind of content or the kind of writing that journal is publishing. And, you know, so these spaces are different. So my experimental writing may not have been published anywhere else, right? Like, you know, it's just, this is what I mean by about it being very chance-based, very much on the judges' thought at that particular time.
I think that's what you said earlier about not writing and thinking about the readers or thinking about what's going to win a competition, but writing about experimentation or playing with form or whatever you're interested in. I think that's the most important point, isn't it? You have to write because you need to write, or you want to write a certain way. If I think it's sort of quite dangerous in a way to slip down the route of thinking about what will work for other people, because it's impossible to predict. You can't do that, and it's not... it's not a satisfying thing to do. Like, if you write what you want, that's fun, and that's when the good writing happens, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think, like, you know, when you're in love with the idea or the thing you're trying to do, it makes the process of writing so different. Like, you know, because you are so involved in it, you're enjoying your own experimentation or your own writing, it's totally different. And I think if we try to do something we thought we should, I wonder how much of that we can retain, like that sense of like wonder in our own writing, the sense of play, and the sense of like, I'm writing something that I actually really am excited about.
We've run out of questions. Well, obviously we haven't. There's plenty more to ask, but we've run out of podcasts maybe. But there's something we did want to ask you. What would you recommend people pick up, go buy in the shops tomorrow, and maybe have a read of? Apart from Carmen Mirachado, because obviously we've established that she's great and we should read her.
Yeah, both of her works, okay.
Okay, and the third one.
Yeah, and the one that's coming out. We have to support. so I'll just say something I've just finished reading is a collection called Heads of the Colored People by Nafisa Thompson-Spire, which came out, I think, like in 2018. And it's a little bit different in the sense that it's a realist collection, but I've honestly not seen such good character work and character studies in such a long time. And, you know, her work, it's got like, it's quite satirical. And so there's like a sort of this political satire and there's humor in it, which is something that I'm not, you know, kind of naturally drawn to. So I was surprised that I loved it so much. But yeah, that's really incredible. Really looks at the complexity of a Black identity in America. And, you know, it just, it does it in such a smart and interesting way. So I would recommend that. And then another thing I recommend is something I'm revisiting because I'm teaching a short story course. So I've been revisiting Leslie Nekarima's stories from What It Means When a Man Falls from the Sky. And that collection is amazing. You know, it's fabulous. It's speculative and literary. It, you know, plays with time and space and form. And yeah, just, it's incredible. It's so expansive, but also intimate and very powerful. Yeah.
Thank you for the recommendations. That's really, really interesting. And of course, we can probably buy them at Brick Lane Bookshop.
Brick Lane Bookshop. Yeah.
Fantastic. So come down. Thank you very, very much for coming on the podcast, the very first episode of the podcast. It was really great having you. And I think you've given so many interesting insights and so many interesting, maybe not like, again, not the recipe for writing a good short story, but just different ways you can try if you're stuck or if you want to try different things. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much for having me. And honestly, it's an honor to be on the first episode. and thank you for asking really interesting questions and letting me ramble on. And it was really fun to just discuss the short story in this way with you both.
It's been great to talk to you. Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Brick Lane Bookshop. Music was by Andrew Everett, and it was produced and edited by Kate Ellis and Peter J. Coles. Find us at bricklanebookshop.org or wherever you find podcasts.